Welcome to Destination Unlocked with me, Daniel Edward.
Just about ready to depart.
If the seatbelt is not fastened, and do make yourself comfortable, please.
Destination Unlocked is the chatty travel podcast where a local expert helps you unlock their corner of the world. Today, we're unlocking Vancouver, a city shaped by mountains, water, migration, and some surprisingly dark history. My guest today is Will Woods. He's the founder of Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours, and we're talking about how Vancouver really came to be, the stories hidden behind the skyline, and why walking this city is the best way to understand it. If you want Vancouver beyond the postcard, stay with us. So, Will, where are you unlocking for us today?
I am unlocking Vancouver in beautiful British Columbia, Canada.
You've been in Vancouver for a while.
I have, yeah, almost 20 years now. My wife is American, and we were living in London. She just finished a master's there. I had a student visa, and we thought, why don't we try living somewhere else for a couple of years and then move back to London to settle down? She didn't really want to move back to the States. I'd lived in Australia for a year. With the work I was doing at the time, I had to be somewhere, like a sizable city that was English-speaking to be able to work. And so I guess we settled on Canada. And then without either of us ever having been there, and we moved out here November 1st, 2006. And then after a couple of months, we thought, oh, this is great. We'll stay here. And here we are.
Wow. So it didn't take long for you to be won over. And now what you do with Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours is you're sharing this adopted home with so many people who love to come and visit it. Why don't we start with the main highlights? If somebody's visiting Vancouver, what do they have to see?
As long as they're somewhat mobile, I would say that it'd be a real shame to come here and not get out into the wilderness, really. I don't mean like going backpacking, you know, off for days into the middle of nowhere, but Vancouver exists at the foot of some pretty big mountains. And if you're really keen, you can get right up into those mountains. You can also walk in like the foothills of those mountains. Or we have this huge park downtown called Stanley Park, which is a large forest. And I think to get out into that Pacific Northwest rainforest and walk around within literally 20 minutes drive of downtown is really unique feature of Vancouver. Not many places have that. So I think every tourist visits Stanley Park. It's really a must-do place to visit. There's lots to see there. There's an amazing aquarium. There's an incredible display of indigenous totem poles. There's the seawall that goes all the way around the outside with the amazing views of the Burrard Inlet and downtown Vancouver. And I do recommend walking the seawall for anyone who comes to visit Vancouver. It's an amazing couple of hours. But you can also get inside Stanley Park on these trails. And you won't see people, apart from the odd local, even though it's really not very far from the seawall itself. If I was coming here for the first time, I'd want to get out there and experience some of that nature in the forest for sure.
And that is so unusual for a big city because there are, just shy of 3 million people who live in Vancouver. And to be able to go 20 minutes and see no one, it's like night and day. The other really nice thing I find about Vancouver is that people have come there from everywhere. It's a place where the world comes together.
That's true. And it's funny you say that because coming from London, that wasn't a culture shock for me because London's so similar, right? I haven't visited everywhere on earth, but I'm imagining there aren't many places as diverse as Vancouver.
The Chinatown stands out for me.
Totally. Yeah, there's a huge Asian population here, not just Chinese. There's also Japanese. There's a lot of Filipinos here, people from Thailand, Vietnamese. There's a really big Asian influence. I think that's probably the cuisine that Vancouver's most famous for in North America anyway. It's amazing to have that. I'm grateful to live somewhere with such a diverse community.
If you're visiting, it can be quite confusing as to know where to stay because there are lots of regions that you could choose in Vancouver. Is there one area that you would say that this is the easiest base that then you've got good access to all the public transport to get you anywhere you might want to see, but this is a good place to stay?
I would say the obvious answer is downtown. And that's where most tourists stay. I'd be lying if I said that downtown Vancouver was an affordable place. Real estate's very expensive and there's not enough accommodation for tourists. If you can afford it, downtown Vancouver's great because you can access so many of the city's tourist locations, like Stanley Park, for example, like the Vancouver Art Gallery, like, you know, the Cole Harbour Seawall, like Gastown, the obvious neighborhood, like Chinatown, very historic neighborhood with a lot of really interesting cultural institutions there. Downtown's very walkable. You haven't got to get Ubers, you haven't got to rent a car. You can walk all over downtown and do so much. If you're looking for a more affordable place to stay, I'd recommend a place called New Westminster, which is on the Fraser River, this mighty river that goes through the south end of Vancouver, city of Vancouver. And New Westminster is actually an older district than Vancouver proper. And so it's got a lot of historic buildings and history in itself. It's an urban neighborhood. You know, you're not out in the suburbs. It's got a city feel to it. There are hotels and some Airbnbs there for sure to stay in. They are more affordable. And it's got amazing transit links from there. You can get what's called the SkyTrain. You can shoot downtown in like 20 minutes. That would be my recommendation for somewhere more affordable. And where I live, North Vancouver, also a great place to stay for tourists. There's a district called the Shipyards District, right by the waterfront in North Vancouver. Amazing views of downtown, lots to do, great for kids to play there. Lots of bars and restaurants. If you come in the winter, you can ski there at Grouse Mountain or Seymour Mountain or Cypress Mountain. And they're really, they're not hard to get to. You can get there in just a short drive. Or you can hike there in the summer. And the more adventurous you are, the further you can go. The North Shore is the place. If you're into mountain biking, skiing, hiking, then there's really no better location. And there's this lovely little ferry you can take from the North Shore to downtown. It takes about 12 minutes, called the Sea Bus. Amazing views. Sometimes even see orcas out there, and maybe see seals. It's a really lovely way to commute to downtown.
And how do you pay for the SkyTrain and the ferry? Is it all one card? Can you just use your bank card? Or?
Yeah, just tap with a credit card.
Okay, so that's your easiest way. But is it cheaper to top up a ticket or no difference?
Oh, maybe you save like 10% by getting a Compass Pass. I don't think it's worth it if you're a tourist. You save like 25 cents or something if you have your own Compass. I think it's like $3 to $5 for transit, like a bus journey or a sea bus or something. You can get Ubers around as well, which I think are usually actually pretty reasonable.
How about getting over to Granville Island?
Yeah, Granville Island's worth a visit. We have a Fringe Festival here in September every year, Vancouver Fringe. I go every year. It's fantastic. There's probably 20 venues on Granville Island, which is used to be an industrial site. And then all heavy industry moved out. The federal government owns this island and they converted many of these old warehouses and works buildings into art spaces. It's a great place to spend a day wandering around. They've got a really great indoor market there as well. If you're into gourmet food, like gourmet cheeses and meats and baked goods, that place is absolutely jammed to the rafters. In September, which is a great time to visit Vancouver because the tourist crowds tend to have died down a little bit by then, but the weather's usually really nice. The Fringe Festival, amazing way to spend a week going to different fringe shows. There's some really fun and diverse and interesting performances you can check out.
What about the best places for food? Because Vancouver's a foodie city.
I like Chinatown. There's a place in Chinatown, east of Main Street, a block called East Georgia. And it's got probably 5 or 6 restaurants. It is fantastic. My friend of mine lives on that block. And I tell him, you live on the best block in the entire city for getting food. They've got ramen, noodles, Vietnamese. There's an Italian restaurant. There's a great Irish pub there as well, East Georgia and Chinatown. I'd also recommend Commercial Drive. Sounds like an industrial estate on the outskirts. But it's like a British high street. It's probably about 2 miles long. There's dozens of restaurants and they're all like independently owned, family run restaurants. A lot of them have been there for years and you are guaranteed to find something you like on Commercial Drive, whatever cuisine you like, Ethiopian, Indian, Japanese, Chinese, lots of Italian restaurants, some great pizza restaurants. It's a great pizza restaurant run by a couple and they separated. So I think the man kept running the restaurant. And the woman opened a pizza restaurant across the street. This is the local legend. They're in like eternal competition with each other to make the finest pizza. It's got, it's really personal.
Oh my gosh, you are just indulging in bitterness with every bite.
Yeah, true enough.
The taste of sweet revenge.
Yeah, exactly. Commercial Drive, it's about a 10 or 15 minute journey on the SkyTrain from downtown.
It sounds fantastic. And again, it's the whole world has come to town on one road.
Yes, 100%.
Something that I got asked about Vancouver, and I thought I'd pass this one on to you. Does it really rain all the time?
It's raining right now. Say that much.
It's raining here as well.
If you come in November and December and January, it is going to rain for sure. The odds of going a week here without rain in those months are very unlikely. The summertime, dry and sunny. between like June and September, it basically doesn't rain. A handful of days, hardly at all. In the winter, people come to ski. So we have a sort of saying here, if it's raining in the city, it's snowing in the mountains. So locals who are into skiing have a little bit of a different relationship with the rain in the winter time, because they're thinking about fresh powder, let's go and ski. Heavy rainfall, people like rubbing their hands to get up the mountain.
And you're sort of oddly protected, Vancouver. I think people who haven't been get a bit confused, because there's Vancouver as a city and then there's Vancouver Island. They're close,
they
but they're different. And I think Vancouver Island protects the city a bit.
Yeah, it does. The real storms come in on the west coast of Vancouver Island. And if you're into storm watching, you want to go up there to the Pacific with the big waves and the storms coming in. It's really dramatic. The lightning on the horizon and the big storms rolling in. We don't get that. We just get rain.
I mentioned earlier, you run Forbidden Vancouver walking tours. It's an extremely exciting name. Where did that idea come from?
I started the company in 2012 and I was looking for a theme to start with. I wanted to do it in Gastown, the oldest neighborhood. So I thought, well, what gives us a reason to walk around Gastown? What is an era that will be of interest to people? What is a set of stories that will be intriguing? I didn't want to just call it like the Gastown walking tour. I wanted to make it themed. And I soon settled on Prohibition history because I felt like everyone knows about Prohibition history in the States. The 1920s, Al Capone, speakeasies, New York City, Chicago, corruption, bootlegging. These are all terms that evoke a sense of a place in the sagas of American history. We had all the same things here. We had bootlegging, mobsters, corruption, illegal drinking dens, and no one associates that with the history of Canada. Actually, Prohibition came in first in Canada before the States, but it was a total catastrophe and it was abolished after a few years, just as it came in the States. So this huge business started up smuggling liquor into the US called rum running, and people made a fortune. The stories of those families and the legacy they left is deep in Vancouver. Some of our most famous live music venues built on rum running money. As soon as I started reading about this, I thought, this is interesting stuff. And that's my litmus test for designing a tour. The idea of a Forbidden Vancouver tour, it plays with Prohibition, the forbidden, the demon drink that was banned at that time. It's a thread that runs through all our work. It's not a sightseeing tour. There are some sites we'll bring you to on the way and talk about, but it's not like an open bus where you go around and there's a audio recording saying, well, this was this and that was that and this was this. This is like deep storytelling in the place where it happened. I love those stories that are not well known because perhaps the city of Vancouver's not wanted to celebrate the people involved in them. It slips from public consciousness. It's like talking about corrupt police chiefs, talking about unsolved murders, talking about, on a darker and more serious note, the treatment of Indigenous people in Stanley Park before it became a park. Like, what happened to those people? It's a terrible story. There's no monument to that. There's no explanation about that in the park when you go as a tourist. There's some nice totem poles. There's a lot more to the story of those totem poles than you're led to believe when you visit. And so I feel like shining a light on some of those dark corners of history is really the through line through all my work.
How do people leave the tour? Are they sort of like in shock and wide-eyed about this totally different city? Because I imagine some locals come on these as well and they thought, well, I thought I knew Vancouver and now, hoo-wee.
Yeah, that's a great question. We probably have about 50% locals on our tours. Very unusual for most tour companies that we have a really big local following. People want to learn about the place they live. And that's what we're here to do. People say to me, I've lived my whole life here. I've lived here for 70 years. I had no idea about any of that.
I bet those stories are repeated at dinner conversations for weeks afterwards. You'll never believe this. Reeling from that shock and realization that there's this whole undercover story. And I'm sure every city has its undercover stories. It's being able to draw it out. You were studying history before, or you were practicing history before?
I don't have any formal training in history.
Right.
All my work has been self-taught. Reading up on Vancouver history, visiting the archives. Now I'm like 13 years in, I'm on the board of the Vancouver Historical Society. I'm a published author on Vancouver history. I've written for many of our local media outlets on Vancouver history. I've been on many podcasts and TV talking about Vancouver history. I've got a lot of friends who are historians in the city who I, you know, I talk to all the time about our take on things compared to what their take is. So I feel now very well placed to do this work. But it's been a journey for me personally. As a caveat to that, our most popular tour, The Lost Souls of Gastown, is very unique and different compared to the average walking tour. It's more like a roving one-person play.
Ooh.
I have an acting background myself. We use professional actors, and they're in character 100% the whole way through as someone from the Victorian era. And so they talk about the most important dramatic events of Gastown's early years. Smallpox outbreaks, the Great Fire, unsolved murders, the impact of the Klondike Gold Rush on the city. But rather than stopping and saying, oh, the Great Fire swept down here faster than a sprinting man, their own story is woven into the story of Gastown's early years. And so for that reason, there is creative license there because it's a fictional character. Some of the other characters they're mentioning are fictional and some are real. But every story is based on documented evidence from the archives around what happened in Vancouver in those early years.
And that style of tour actually does give a good touch to Vancouver's creative scene, because there is a big creative scene in Vancouver.
There is a big movie business here, yeah. People call it Hollywood North. I understand it's the third biggest centre outside of LA and New York City for filming in North America. You'll often see endless trucks lined up and cameras and lights and things. It's very rare I actually walk along and see something being filmed. It always seems to be they're setting up or taking down. Gastown is one of the places they film the most. And often you're walking along and suddenly you'll come across like 100 very smartly dressed people, who are all the extras. And you've all got to stop. The police will stop you. They film the scene, action, and everyone's walking about and there's cameras. Like 2 minutes, it's like cut. And then all the locals can carry on.
You can't plan that into the tour.
We'll just pause. We'll watch this for a couple of minutes and then we'll get moving.
Where can people find out more about your tours?
Online, forbiddenvancouver.ca. And they can put them on the website as well. Very straightforward. And we've got all the tours profiled on there for people to check out. Saturday nights, we will sell out for sure. But as much as possible, we try and keep a bigger team of guys and just add guides. Rather than saying we're capping it at 20 people, we'll add a second guide and then we can bring more people. If you can be a little bit flexible, you'll have no trouble booking even the day before.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Destination Unlocked, where Will Woods is making Charles Dickens posthumously wish he'd been born in Vancouver. If you enjoy tours with a little dramatic flair, all factual mind, these aren't ghost tours, you'll actually come away with some real undercover history here, you can check out the full range at forbiddenvancouver.ca. Time for a quick Vancouver quiz. Bonus point if you follow the Destination Unlocked podcast wherever you're currently listening. Good luck. First question. What is the giant green urban park that is bigger than New York Central Park?
Stanley Park.
Indeed it is.
How much bigger is it?
Oh my gosh.
Question for you.
I'm going to guess double.
10%.
Bigger.
How many acres?
570.
Wasn't the one.
So I went over for one, away under.
I've got a lot more questions. If you're interested, it's gone the wrong way, this quiz.
Doing extremely badly at this quiz. I think I'm right on this one, but only because I've researched it in advance. What was Vancouver's original name before incorporation?
The official name was the Granville Town Site, and then unofficially Gastown.
Yeah, I had Granville. But I'll give you 2 points for that.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
I don't know what for, but... True or false? You can ski... and sail on the same day in Vancouver.
It's true. It might be a cold day out on the water, but you can do it.
If you love the outdoors and if you love being active, you have got it all.
You do. A friend of mine runs a company called Vancouver Water Adventures, and they have the biggest jet ski fleet in North America or something crazy. And so you can go in English Bay in the heart of the city, and then you've got sort of the main body of the city of Vancouver that goes out to UBC at the end. You can like rent jet skis and go jet skiing anytime between sort of June and September. Being out there is amazing. Like those things really move. flying past Stanley Park on a jet ski.
And the fact that you're protected from the main ocean means you can go even faster. Next question. Which suspension bridge is the city's most famous thrill spot?
There's two suspension bridges on the North Shore. There's the Capilano Suspension Bridge, which is the longer bridge. And it's the more dramatic setting. The canyon's deeper there. And then there's the Lynn Canyon Suspension Bridge, which is near where I live. The main difference is that Lynn Canyon's free. Also some other things at the Capilano Suspension Bridge. You can walk the bigger suspension bridge. You can go on the cliff walk. A lot of really interesting information about the forest, about indigenous people, the Squamish Nation, that's whose land it's on. If your sole interest is to walk over a suspension bridge, then the Lynn Valley Suspension Bridge, it saves you a lot of money. And also, if you're really into like hiking or just going on a walk in the forest, Lynn Valley's got limitless trails. It's really impressive. The canyons, got huge cliffs, and raging, depending on the time of year. If you're there in the spring, it's like raging river as the snow melts.
It's nice to know that there is an option to do it on a lower budget, because city breaks can get expensive. Final question in our quiz, and you've already got more points than there are questions. What seafood delicacy is considered the local favourite?
There's a couple of things that come to mind. There's the BC roll, which is a kind of sushi, but then also salmon. You know, there's a number of different salmon dishes, often served on a cedar plank, quite common. And you're talking about salmon runs, even today, massive salmon runs that come through. And before the advent of industry in this part of the world, you can imagine the scale of the salmon runs that must have come through here. Millions and millions and millions of salmon. That was, of course, central to people's lives here, a huge part of their diet, and also a deep part of the mythology and culture and history of the people here. You know, the salmon is a sacred creature to the Coast Salish people. And that's not coincidental. So one of the things I try and do on tours is to introduce some of these indigenous place names. So Burrard Inlet, for example, is called Slaywit, hence Slaywit Tooth, people of the inlet. Vancouver used to be called Gastown. Officially, it was called Grantville, the Grantville town site. That was Kamkamalay, meaning place of the big leaf maple tree. That's the Coast Salish name for this. And these days, when you drive down from Whistler down to Vancouver, Whistler, it's about 2 hours away. You could ski for a week and not do the same run twice. It is absolutely enormous. The drive there is on a road called the Sea to Sky Highway. They put on the drive now the settler place name and also all the indigenous place names. So you can learn as you go along. So I think it's a really great addition or evolution in how we think about the city.
And understanding what those place names mean is also a key part of it, because the indigenous place names were usually educational. They had a message in them for passing on information. It wasn't just a nice name, it was a clear description of what this place either threatened or offered, or what you could do there, what you could see. It was a key way of sharing information about a place.
Yeah, I like your point now. I hadn't actually thought about it that way, but that makes a lot of sense. With the place names that I'm familiar with, many of them fit that description. So Kamkamalay, place of the big leaf maple tree. Hoi Hoi, which was the largest village site in what is today Stanley Park, place of making masks. It was a spiritually significant site that was used for like cultural celebrations, which often involved masks. So yeah, there's a few examples of that come to mind.
Well, you got at least 5 out of 5 there, I think probably more. It's a huge thing in North America generally. What is the correct rate for tipping in Vancouver? For meals, for tours, for taxis, for people looking at you and smiling?
Yeah, it can be intimidating to go somewhere and feel this pressure around tipping, but not sure exactly what you should be doing. In restaurants, you definitely should be tipping in restaurants and bars. I know in Britain, if you go to a pub, you don't tip. You should definitely tip here, and people will not be happy with you if you're not tipping.
And do they suggest the amount to you?
Yeah, you usually get the little machine. It comes up with the options, and it's like 15, 18, 20, 18, 20, 25. I'd say anything between 15 and 20% for food and like if you're going to a bar or something. 20 is like, oh yeah, this was a really great service. 15, like, that was fine. And anywhere in the middle for a normal meal would be what I'd say. I don't know if this is happening in the UK, but in a lot of stores, you're also asked, like when you do your checkout, they're asked if you want to leave a tip. So it's like, if I go to my local, they're called liquor stores here, like an off-license, and it's like, here's my 4 beers, do I want to leave a 20% tip? And I have to be honest, my answer is usually no.
I've never seen that before. Wow.
Yeah, that's very common here. But I would say not to feel any pressure as a visitor to tip people in stores. Like, you won't get it in a supermarket. A food court in a mall, you might get asked there, do you want to leave a tip? Personally, I think if I'm in a restaurant and I'm getting served, I'll leave a tip. If it's in a food court, I think, well, I'm not leaving a 20% tip, but I will leave a 5% tip. And food courts are quite common here. A very cost-effective way to get lunch. But no one's using cash anymore, right? So the little thing comes up. Do I want to leave 15, 20, or 25? I'm like, no tip. I'm not going to pay any of those options. Some food court places will say like 5, 10 or 15. I'm like, yeah, 5 or 10. That's just a little extra for the person preparing the food. You know, those 5% might add up for them. I don't mind doing that. Taxes, I think 10, maybe 15% for a taxi or Uber. It's not quite as prevalent or extensive as in the States. There's like, you know, there's real tipping culture down there, but it's a gentle version of that. It's not that different. You know, you are expected to tip if someone's serving you. Tour guides, you expect to tip a tour guide. You know, I think for me, that depends on obviously what you thought of the experience, but you know, everyone's in their own place in terms of their own finances and what kind of budget they're traveling on. But you do want to make sure you tip your bartender or your server, that's for sure.
Or you'll regret it and not be able to go back. Do you have a favourite place in Vancouver that you like to go in the evening?
I like Gastown. I go in Gastown a lot. Great nightlife scene there. There's this amazing live music venue in Gastown that no tourists ever know about. It's a locals place. A little bit tricky to find. It's underground. It's called Guilt & Co. It's a funny name. It's underneath a bar called Local. So it's in Mapletree Square. Look for a big lineup of people seemingly going down into a basement. There's not a big sign up or anything, but Guilt & Co. Absolutely fantastic live music venue. Low ceiling. It's an old building, goes back to the 1890s. It's a really cool space to be in. Great live music there. They have some really, really good local bands there. They do a night there once a month called Under a Harlem Moon with a local artist called Crystal De Santos and all those old R&B and Motown hits. Everyone's dancing. Really, really fun. Gastown's got three different comedy clubs. Certainly the underground comedy club. They get some really good acts in there. A lot of comics will come through on touring, playing like the bigger stadiums, like well-known comics. They'll do warm-up gigs at one of these local comedy clubs. That can be a really funny, really fun night out doing that. And there's a lot of good bars around there as well.
We mentioned day trips out to Whistler, especially for people who love skiing and also hiking and stuff into the summer, going up the Sea to Sky Highway. Is there anywhere else for a good day trip? If you're in Vancouver for a week or more than a week, a good easy day trip out of Vancouver, another destination to check?
Canada's a big place and things are spread out, right? So a day's not very long to get somewhere and back. You're not really leaving Metro Vancouver. You can do a day trip to Vancouver Island to go to Victoria. It's a pretty long day because the ferry ride's 2 hours. You've got to drive an hour to the ferry terminal, wait for your ferry, take your ferry. It's another half an hour drive on the other end. You can do an organized tour that will get you started really early in the morning. It'll get you to Victoria. You can look around for a few hours, maybe go to the Bouchard Gardens, which are kind of a botanical garden in Victoria, and then it'll get you home. It's a long day. If you can stay the night, it'll be more chill. But if you've got longer than a day, like even Whistler, you could do Whistler in a day, right? Like when I ski there with my son, because it's expensive to stay there, right? We'll leave at like 6, be on the ski hill by 8:30, closes at 4, jump in the car, drive home, back in time for dinner. So you can do it. You can go up there to ski for the day or just visit for the day and look around. But if you can stay a night or two, it makes it a bit more relaxed and you can fit a bit more in. And if you've got a few days, you can really get out and explore British Columbia, which has just got so much to offer. It's an amazing place. One of the places that we love going to, we go every year, it's called the Okanagan. It's a region about 5 hours east of Vancouver. And it's this northern tip of the Mojave Desert that stretches all the way through the states, through Idaho, Utah, Arizona, and down into Mexico and all the way down to Central America. That mountain range, it's a desert. And the very northern tip just pokes into Canada, the only desert in Canada called the Okanagan. And it's not like Arizona. Obviously, it's much further north. It's arid. It's a bit like Spain or California. It's absolutely beautiful. Massive lakes. The main lake there, Lake Okanagan, is like 5 times bigger than Loch Ness or something.
Can you imagine how big the monster is?
I know. They've got a monster, apparently. They've got a statue of it anyway. Sort of desert mountains on both sides. The water's so warm in the lake. You can swim there in the summer and there's like, you can spend all day out there in the water. It's because it's a desert. It's really warm. It sounds like a bit too hot, to be honest, in the summer. They've got beaches along the lakefront there. It's not that crowded. It's not well known. Locals go there, but you haven't got people flying in there to visit there from all over the world. It's a bit more low key, which I really like. And the drive there is just phenomenal. There's a provincial park called Manning Park you can drive through on these like clifftop roads and huge snow-capped mountains, wild rivers. You often see bears on the drive. It's really something. You know, we get so many guests on our tours who fly to Calgary, see the Rockies, which the Rockies are just, I hope you do a show on the Rockies for someone who knows more about them.
I will do my best to get someone from the Rockies.
I really recommend the Rockies. Canadian Rockies are unbelievable. The glaciers, the huge, crazy mountains, the forest, all the wildlife you see there. The last time we went, we saw grizzly bears, eagles, giant herds of goats crossing the streets. So you've got to stop your car, caribou. It was really something. And then you drive through the Kootenays, which is sort of like a smaller set of mountains, incredibly scenic. They haven't got the scale of the Rockies, but just beautiful, beautiful scenery. And then into the Okanagan, which is this like desert region. There's a big wine growing industry there. It's full of vineyards. You can go and visit all these vineyards and do wine tastings and like, you know, bike rides you can do between the vineyards, that kind of thing. And then from there through Manning Park and into Vancouver. If you have 10 days and you do that, you rent a car and do Calgary to Vancouver, you will have an absolutely fantastic time.
You'll never want to leave.
The wrap-up, roundup, quickfire finish is now ready for boarding.
All right, time for our quickfire round. So I've got six questions for you. What is your top thing, one thing, to see or do in Vancouver?
For me personally, it would be getting out and doing a walk or hike in the mountains or in Stanley Park. That would be my number one.
What would be your tourist trap to avoid?
I don't want to upset any of my friends in the tourism industry. Tourist trap to avoid. Personally, from my own perspective, I would avoid going to a shopping mall like Metro Town, the Pacific Centre, Robson Street. I'm not really interested in walking around loads of stores. You do see them advertised to tourists, and you do see tourists that go to the shopping malls. I know some people love shopping. I don't like doing that. And it's the same stores you see everywhere, to be honest. So it's not, there's nothing special to Vancouver.
There's no reason to do it there. Yeah.
I don't think so. So that would be my somewhat carefully chosen answer to that question.
Very diplomatic. What's your favourite time of year to visit Vancouver?
I was thinking about that recently, actually. September's great because it can get pretty hot. And when you're a tourist and it's really hot and you're thirsty and you know, you're walking around all day, it can be quite draining, right? So September, it's a little bit cooler, but it's just lovely weather. September, and it's not quite so crowded. There's not quite so many tourists here. So I'd say September's great. Also really nice in May. We've got a lot of cherry trees here. Again, a big Asian influence in the city. There's whole streets lined with cherry trees. And when those cherry blossoms come out, it is something else. You know, you walk down three blocks of just bright pink explosion the whole way down. Some of the residential streets in Vancouver have got some really nice old heritage houses with the cherry blossoms outside. It can still be a little bit wet in May, so you might get a little bit of rain, but the cherry blossoms just after a rainfall, what a thing to see. So I think it's a toss-up, May versus September for me.
What would be a good book or film to see or read before you go to Vancouver?
There's no shortage of films that were made here. You'd never know it was Vancouver. Happy Gilmore, that was filmed here. That's a movie that you've seen. There's countless movies that have been filmed here. They won't really tell you about the city, though. Books. I'm friends with a lot of local history writers. I'm going to offend someone by not mentioning their book. But the book I would share that I read recently that I'd absolutely love, a book called Blood, Sweat and Fear. It's about the old city coroner. His name is Inspector Vance. And his story of his life is absolutely incredible. And the window into what it was like here in the 30s, 40s and 50s. For me, I think it's one of the most interesting times in Vancouver's history is the interwar period. Obviously, the Prohibition era and going into the Great Depression, very interesting time here in the Great Depression. It hit Vancouver very hard. Into the 1940s, when there were a lot of crime and corruption problems in Vancouver in the 40s. And so this man's career spans that period. And he incorporates the changes in technology that happened around investigating crime. It's like CSI, but in the 1930s. And this guy's going out there trying to solve crimes. And that's very, very interesting. The author's called Eve Lazarus. And she's a really prolific and very talented local historian. So that's, if you can get a copy, Blood, Sweat and Fear. It's about Vancouver, but it's about that era. So even if you're not from here, you really get a lot out of it. I could talk a long time about Vancouver history books that I like. Another one that comes to mind is called Vancouver Noir by John Belshaw and Diane Purvey. again, about that interwar period and about cultural changes, and in particular changes in the media and changes in media technology, like the advent of the portable camera really changed news media, because now you had reporters turning up at crime scenes, taking photographs, and putting them in newspapers. That never happened before, because you need like half an hour to take a photograph. Now there's a lot of journalistic standards around that. But in those days, with this new technology, you'd have newspaper reporters showing up at crime scenes before the police sometimes. Newspapers are big business and they're well-funded and a lot of reporters around. And so you'd have newspaper reporters taking photos, very graphic photos of crime scenes, putting them in newspapers. And it really fed into that film noir aesthetic and the film noir era. They're very talented historians, John and Diane, and they really tell an interesting story about that connection between technology, news media, art, and life. Very interesting.
I like the sound of both of them. Okay, what is your top food or drink to try when you visit?
It's probably sushi. Yeah, sushi or dim sum. Dim sums are kind of Chinese dumplings. So I think sushi or dim sum holds up pretty well, Vancouver, compared to any other North American city, I think.
And final question, I want a top authentic souvenir, something I can take home from Vancouver that is not a fridge magnet or a t-shirt.
I think it would have to be a piece of indigenous artwork, and not some mass-produced copy made in a different country. Something authentically made by a local indigenous artist.
And how do you know where to find that?
There's art galleries around. They're going to be a bit more on the expensive side. Museum of Vancouver's got a really good gift store. Has a lot of really thoughtful items and a lot of indigenous made or informed gifts as well. So that's a good place. That's an interesting place to visit too. It's near Granville Island, just walking distance from Granville Island. There's places on Granville Island as well. Can I give a more political answer?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think about with my work is that this was a British colony, and the indigenous people suffered terrible abuses during that time. And there's still indigenous people are suffering to this day across Canada for a number of different reasons in different ways. The British came here and established a system called the residential school system, where indigenous children were forcibly taken from their homes and their families and sent to these remote institutions where they were imprisoned. And many of them died from abuse. Many of them suffered terrible abuse. Starvation was often used as a punishment tactic. And this went on for like 100 years. The last one, they've been close to the 90s. There was a commission into this about 20 years ago that really finally shone a light on what actually went on in these schools, more like child prisons. There's a national day of mourning that we have every year to honour and commemorate those young people who suffered as a result of that system. And we all wear orange T-shirts across the country. The slogan for this movement is Every Child Matters. And you can buy a T-shirt here that says Every Child Matters. And in most cases, you're buying it, it's going to make a contribution to a local Indigenous person or group or nonprofit that's helping Indigenous youth. And you can share some history that isn't well known. Maybe it's different these days, but I went through the British school system. I did history in school and I never learned anything about the British Empire.
No.
It wasn't mentioned. I never learned anything about residential schools. I get British people come on tours and they say, oh, it was terrible what Canadians did to Indigenous children. That was terrible. And I remind them the people doing this were often A, British, and considered themselves British. And the idea of a Canadian identity took a long time to develop.
Usually I would say, come on, not a T-shirt. What's a T-shirt as a souvenir? But
yeah, you mentioned that. And that's not just a T-shirt. It's a political statement wearing that, which I think is powerful.
Will Woods, from Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours, thank you so much for unlocking Vancouver for us.
Daniel, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's all for this episode of Destination Unlocked. A big thank you to Will Woods from Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours for unpacking Vancouver's lesser-known stories, from prohibition and crime to neighbourhoods shaped by history rather than hype. If you enjoy travel that goes deeper than the highlights, his walking tours are brilliant. And if you've enjoyed this episode, hit follow or subscribe so you can easily find your way back next time. I'm Daniel Edward. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.